Oh, she gives it a five. Oh.
Okay, let's start. So today we will talk about how to build a simple sequential processor. And first we will start with the basic components that we will use in this processor. First thing to know is registers. Registers are simple. You can think about it as a very simple storage which has input and output, and they can take the input and store it and pass it to the output. So if one of the example of register is the PC, the program counter that we use to point where is the instruction located in memory. And this is basically a register. It has some circuits inside to do some stuff, but we won't look into it. What we want to know is here it has an input, and it's supposed to pass that input to the output. So the register would take the input value and update its state. And then we can get that value from the output where. But the important thing to know that the register would get updated at the leading edge of every clock cycle. So suppose we have different inputs at the register. So different color here represents different value. And for initially, the output is this blue thing, like some value represented by the blue color. And you can see that during that time, we have changed the value of input. So from the striped things, we made it to green. But the output didn't change as soon as we changed the input. The output only got changed when there is this leading edge of the clock. So then we can get the state of the PC, which is the green value. And during that, the duration of the cycle, even if we have changed the input, the output doesn't change. The output change only at the next leading edge of the clock cycle. So what is clock? Clock is basically a signal that goes to most of the components in our processor. And this is basically a physical wire which goes to every single thing and says that this is the start of a cycle, which is the leading edge, or you can say that this is the end of the previous cycle, and it marks the start of a cycle. Within that cycle, we perform many different operations within the processor, but the states get updated only when we have this leading edge of the clock. So we can change the input to the PC, so this is the register which is updated at every clock cycle. But the change would get updated only with the leading edge of the clock cycle. Any questions? Were you in the last class?
No.
No question? Okay. So we have some basic components that we will use in the processor that we will design in this class. The first one is the program counter. that we already talked about. So the input is the PC and PC for the next cycle. And here the output is the PC that we wanted to write in the previous cycle. Then we have this memory. This one is called instruction memory. You can see that we have another memory here, which is called data memory. The difference is the instruction memory contains the instruction stream that we have in our program. So if we have written a program add Q, move Q, then some other instruction, those instructions are stored here in different memory location. And if we want to read that instructions, what we have to do is we have to provide the address of that memory location, which is basically the PC points to the next instruction that we want to execute, right? That would be the input, and instruction memory inside have some logic to get that data from that memory location, and it has this output which will provide us with the value in that memory location. Yes?
Is the instruction memory somewhere on the heap? Somewhere down there?
So, heap is, so when we are coding, heap is where we allocate dynamic data, right? So basically, that's the data we use within our application. And usually that's the data memory. So the variables or the some values from the memory that we are trying to read or write. Those are the things usually are in data memory. And instruction memory contains only the instructions that we have in our program.
I guess, in what we'll actually be using, they'll actually access the same memory somehow. We'll talk much later in the semester about how that can happen. There will all be different ways of accessing one big piece of memory.
So this memory is not the exact memory we plug in our desktop right now. But this is something we are using to simplify designing the processor. But we will read later that what is exactly this instruction memory and data memory. The next component is the register file. So when we saw the y86 instruction set architecture, it was operating on a bunch of registers, and there were 15 registers, 0 to 15. I guess the we had one special. But so those are the, so we need some place where we can read or write those registers. The register file is a component which contains all those registers. And if we want to read a register, we actually have to provide its register number as input. So here for this register file, we can read two registers at the same time. So that's why we have these inputs, source A and source B. If we provide the numbers, what the register file would do is it will look up those registers and read the value from those registers and output them here. So the R source A basically means that the register value of source A, R source B is register value of source B. But we could also write to a register, right? And for that we need two different inputs. We have to say what is the register number where we want to write some value, and we also have to provide the value that we want to write. So that's why we have these destination M and destination E. So these are, again, terminology used in the book, so we are just keeping the same terminology. But these are two register numbers we will use if we want to write some registers. And these are the two inputs where we have to provide the values. Then we have data memory, which is where we actually can read or write some data value. So for example, we had move instruction. Move instruction can read some data from memory and then move it to register. So in that case, what we have to provide is, as an input, we have to provide the address of the location in the memory. And once we do that, we can get the value of that memory location in the output. And I guess I kind of omitted this one. So we also have these registers which store the zero flag and the sign flag. And basically, it's similar to the PC. So let's take a closer look at the memories. For the instruction memory, I said it has just one input, one output. The input is some location in the memory. So the input is address, and the output is the value of that location. But the important thing to know here is this doesn't depend on the clock cycle. So you can see that once we have changed the input address, there is some slack because the instruction memory has to do some lookup and read the value from the location. But then after some time, the value gets to the output. So there is no dependency on the clock. You can assume that once we have provided the address, after just a small amount of time, we will get the value of that memory location. Next is the data memory. The data memory, we have two kinds of inputs here. We could provide what is the address we want to write plus the value that we want to write to memory. Or we can provide the address we want to read, and then we get the data in that location as an output. But it also has two extra signals, which are read enable and write enable. So it will not read or write memory every cycle or whenever we are changing the inputs. In order to make sure that we are reading or writing something to or from memory, we have to enable the read signal or the write signal. But there is also another difference. So when we try to update this some location in memory, that actually has to be done with the clock cycle. So for example here, suppose we want to write to some location in memory, so we provide the address and also we provide the data that we want to write in that location. And suppose that location in memory already had some prior initialized value, which is represented by this blue color. And even if we have changed the inputs, the memory location doesn't get written until we have this leading edge in the clock. Once we see the clock, the leading edge, then the value gets updated in memory. Any question here? Okay. let's take a look at the register file again. So we, I already talked about that we have these inputs, which are register numbers. And in that case, we get the values of the register here as output. But we could also write to the register. In that case, we would provide the register number here and the data to write here. So now we want to see how this read and write happens. What's the relation with clock? So for read, once we change the input in these pins, the register value in the output would change almost immediately. There, it would just look up that registers and read the value and output them. But for the write, it will depend on the clock. So we even if we change the inputs here, we change what is the register number we write, then we provide the data, the value in the register will change only if we see a leading edge of the clock cycle. Any question? So again, for registers, if we want to read something, we provide the input number for the register, and we will get the value in the output. But for writes, we provide the input, the number of the register, and the data we want to update. But the register will get updated only when that cycle ends and we see a leading edge in the clock cycle. So you can ask why this happens. Basically, there are some instruction in a processor where we would read a register value, but we also update a register value. If they simultaneously happens together, and you're reading and writing the same register at the same cycle, then you can have some inconsistency. So in order to avoid that, when we are reading, we don't allow any update. Only when the cycle ends, then the registers get updated. Any more questions? So there is this special case for the register file. This is consistent with the assignments that you will do for Y86. So we have 4 bits to represent the register numbers, 0 to 15. And this 15 is the special case. If we provide 15 as a register number while we are reading some register, it will mean that the output here would be always 0. And when we are writing some register and the value here is 15, that means that register file would ignore that operation. So it wouldn't write anything into the register. Okay. So the next component we will use is an arithmetic logic unit. Basically, it takes 2 inputs and then compute something with those inputs. And if you remember the Y86 instruction set, we actually had 2 logical and arithmetic, 4 logical and arithmetic operations: add, subtraction, XOR, and AND. But we have this one unit which can perform any of these operations. So that means that we need another input which says that which exact operation we want to perform here. And based on this operation select, we could have the result as A add B, A subtract B, A XOR, and so on. Any question? Okay. So let's try to use these components to build a very simple processor. And let's assume that the processor that we want to build or design that can perform only one instruction, which is add Q. We had that in our Y86 instruction set. So add Q takes the value of these two registers, adds them, then put the result in RYY, the second register. And because we just have one instruction in our ISA, we actually don't need any opcode here. So the encoding is just 2 4-bit register numbers. Then the length of the instruction is 1 byte, 4-bit plus 4 bits. And there is no other instruction. So the program that it can execute is add Q, like a bunch of add Q. But also it will help us to see that how to design one instruction. So these are the components that we need. You can see that we are not using any data memory because it just operates on two registers. It doesn't access memory. So the first thing we want to do is we want to read the instruction from the memory. If we want to read the instruction from memory, we need to know where it is located in the instruction memory. And the program counter tells us the location. So the first thing we will do is we will take the PC and use it as the input to our instruction memory. So this is an address, right? And whenever instruction memory gets an address, it reads the location, reads the data from that location. And remember that our instruction stream has a bunch of adds. So it will, and the add looks, the format of add is just 2 4-bit numbers. So once it gets an address, it will read the content, and the byte that it reads will look like this. So we have 4 bits for RXX and 4 bits for RYY. So now what we have to do is we have to take these two register numbers from the 1 byte that we have read from instruction memory and connect them to the register file. So that's what we did. We used this split logic, which is just taking this 1 byte and taking those 2 4-bits. And we connect them to the inputs of the register file. And remember that register file is taking 2 register numbers as input. So that's why there is 2 connections to source A and source B. As soon as the register file gets those inputs, it will read the value of those registers and output them here in these pins. So we take the values of the registers, and because this is an add instruction, we are supposed to add those data values. So we will need an ALU. In this case, because we just have we have only one instruction add, it will just add those 2 values and give us the output. Now the add instruction, the add Q instruction says that whatever the result is, that is supposed to be written back to register RYY. So that means that now we have to provide 2 inputs to our register file. First, we need to take this value that's computed by the ALU and connect it here, which is the value that we want to update. And then we have to take the value, the register number from RYY. We get it from the same connection that we had sent to the second register. So this goes to destination E. And now the register file is set up for writing back that value or updating that value in the register. But that wouldn't happen until we get to the leading edge, right? So when we get to the leading edge, then the values would get written back to the register. So for example, let's assume we have these two add instructions in our program. And they're located in these positions. And the first one is operating on RAX and RDX. And initially, RAX has value 1, RDX has value 3. So after we have done all these things, at the end of the cycle, the RDX gets updated. But now we are supposed to process the next instruction, right? And the next instruction needs to be read somewhere from the instruction memory. But we didn't update the program counter. So we are actually not done designing these add queue instruction. We have to have some kind of path here to make sure the PC gets updated at the end of the cycle too. So now if we look at the encoding, this add instruction, it does not have any opcode, and the instruction length is 1 byte. So in order to get to the next instruction, we have to add 1 to the PC. So that's why what we do is we take the current PC here, add 1 to it, and feed it back to the input of the PC. Again, so we have set it up what should be the next PC, but the register will get updated only when the cycle ends with the leading edge of the clock. So now we actually have correctly set it up to perform multiple add instructions. So here now the PC gets updated and we could start fetching the next add instruction. Any question here? No? Okay, let's just do a quick summary. So we want to implement this add queue instruction. And the first thing we do is we take the program counter because it indicates the address of the instruction. Instruction memory gets the address and reads that memory location and outputs it. So now we have 1 byte of data which contains 2 register numbers. But we need to have some kind of logic to get those 4 bits for 2 different registers. So we have this split logic. It takes these 2 4-bit register numbers and inputs them to the register file. Register file reads the values of those registers, outputs the data, and we feed them to our ALU. ALU adds up those 2 values, produces the result of the add operation. And what we need to do next is we need to write back that result to the second register. So we take the value, we also properly set up what's the destination register number, and then we expect that when the cycle ends, that register would get updated. But simultaneously, we have to make sure that we could keep fetching the next instruction, so we have to update the PC. And here, because each instruction has 1 byte length, each cycle we are adding 1 to the PC. Any more question? Is it clear? Yes.
So would you ever use the ALU for adding 1 to the program counter? Is it a dedicated increment?
Okay. So usually it is a dedicated ALU. So here we just have 1 add instruction. We could have just added an adder, but to be consistent, we are saying it is an ALU which can do other operations. And here we could have, so there has to be some logic which adds either 1 or whatever the instruction length is. but usually it has some separate logic to do that. Yes.
So for CISC, I say it's plus one would have to be something much more complicated.
So CISC says that the instruction length is variable, right? So if we have multiple instruction which can have different lengths, then we have to have some logic which says that what it needs to add. We will actually see it later. So the Y86 actually is a CISC instruction set, at least considering the instruction length. The different instruction can have different length for Y86. So in that case, yes, we actually have to have some logic which decides what should we add here. We will see, like, maybe after a couple of slides. Any more questions? Okay. So now let's try to design the processor for another instruction, which is the jump instruction. And again, this is the only instruction this processor can execute. And the format is jump label. Label is an 8-byte address. And similar to the prior example, because there is only one instruction, we don't need any opcode. So the instruction length here is 8-byte. So jump doesn't do any kind of register operation or memory operation or even ALU operation for ours. So here, for this instruction, we only need two components. Jump says that take the location of the memory, which is defined by label, and make your PC updated to that value. So what will happen is we will take the current value of the PC and input it in the instruction memory. The memory would read the value of that location, and this instruction doesn't have anything else, right? It just have this 8-byte address in that value. So we just directly take the output and feed it to the PC. So in the next cycle, the PC will get updated to that value, and we will try to fetch the next instruction from that location. So let's actually take an example. So we have like a bunch of jumps here, and they are located at different addresses. And in the initial state, the PC contains 00, so it's pointing to the first instruction. So what will happen is we will read, so here we will take 00 as the input address for the instruction memory. And at 00, we will see that the 8 bytes that we will read, it has 10 in it. So it will output 10. The instruction memory will output 10. This value will come here as an input of the PC. So at the next cycle, the PC gets updated. So we get 10 as input, and now the memory is supposed to read the value located at 10. So it will go to here. And then the jump instruction there is jump to address 08. So that's why the third one jumps to that. Any question here? No? Okay. So, till now, what we have seen is just one kind of instruction. But the processor we will design that will have multiple types of instruction. And sometimes there would be places where one instruction needs one type of input, but the other needs another type of input. And in order to resolve that type of cases, we use another component, which is called MUX. And basically, this is something which can have multiple inputs, For example, here we have A, B, C, D, and one of them would be transferred to the output. But which one goes to the output, that will be decided by this mux select where. So based on the value of the select 0, 1, 2, 3, and the output, we could have A or B or C or D. And you could think about it as a logic, right? If the select bits contain 0, 0, we only allow A to move to the output. If it's 0, 1, we will allow B. If it's 2 and 3, then we transfer C or D. Any question? So this is the mask. We will use it many places to make sure that the instructions actually use the correct inputs to different components. So let's try to see what happens when we have two instructions. So the first instruction is jump, which we already have seen. But we are adding a new instruction with it, which is the no op instruction. The no op instruction doesn't do anything, so that's why it's called no operation. But it actually moves to the next instruction and execute, like make sure that the PC points to the next instruction. And because now we have two instructions, we need to differentiate between those two instructions. That's why we have this opcode. And the opcode we are using is the same that we will use for Y86. So for jump, the jump instruction starts with 07 in the first byte, and nop, it has only one byte which contains 10. And these are the two instructions that now we have in our ISA. So here we are showing the format again. So you can see that this, the first byte differentiates the opcodes, and nop, since it doesn't do anything, there is no other register or memory location. But for jump updates the PC to this value, which is here in the destination. So it has 9 bytes. So how can we design these two instructions? So first, we have to take the PC and read the instruction from the instruction memory. So that's kind of same for the both. But once we have read the value from the instruction memory, now we need to decide if it's a jump instruction or nop instruction. So that's why after split, we take the opcode and feed it to some logic. And this logic outputs 1 if it's a jump instruction and 0 if it's a nop instruction. And based on if the instruction is jump or nop, we are supposed to provide different things as input to our PC. So here, if we actually have the nop instruction, we want to add 1 to the PC because the length of the nop instruction is 1. But for jump instruction, we actually want to take this destination value from the instruction and send it to the PC. So that's why we actually need a mask. It decides what value to pass to the PC. So if this is a nop instruction, this logic here, based on the opcode, will output 0. And what will happen is this PC plus 1 value would get to the output of the max and come to the PC input. But if this logic outputs 1, That means that select this destination value from the input of the mask, pass it to the output, and this destination comes here. So basically, mask is saying that what value to pass to the PC. Any question? Yes.
So in full, when we do all of y86, we're going to have an opcode for every starting digit.
So if you remember last week, we showed all the formats of all the instruction in y86. And you will see that, I guess I don't have the figure, but if you look at the book or the slides for y86, the first byte is kind of different for all the instruction. And for y86, the first four bits will say that what kind of instruction it is. But there are some special cases, like for move CC or jump, which can have some conditional code, where we actually have to look at the next four bits within the first byte too. So that the first byte always will tell us what kind of instruction we are operating.
All right, so because of those special cases, you still need to have that thing which decodes for the MUX?
For those cases, so if we were designing all the instructions, then we will need, so it will depend on what are the possible values for PC. If we only had these two possible values, PC plus one and destination, then we will just need one mask with two inputs. But what you will see is we could have other possibility too. So at the end, we will have a mask with more than two inputs. But the high level design goal is the same. There are multiple options to update the PC, and depending on the opcode, we have to decide what value we transfer to PC. Any more questions? But yeah, we will see later, like when we go through all the instruction as the same processes. So we are starting in a smaller scale before we get to the whole thing. So now it's an exercise for you to try to design a processor where you have two instructions. One is the NOP instruction, which doesn't do anything, and the add instruction, which we saw prior in some slides ago. Add instruction takes the values of two registers, adds them, and writes them back to the destination register. And we would like to know that where we would need MUXes. So we need MUXes where there are multiple options for the input, and based on which instruction we are executing, we want to make sure that the correct thing gets transferred to the input. And I guess the best way to start is with this figure. So this is kind of the path for the add instruction. And we want to, on top of it, we want to add the NOP instruction. And remember that this was the design when we had only one NOP instruction. So there was no opcode. But once we have two instructions, we actually have to have opcode. So given that path, if we try to add the NOP instruction in that design, where we are supposed to have MUXes. So you can start with that picture, try to think about it, talk to your people sitting beside you, and discuss. to remember where are the conflicts, where NOP also trying to do something and the add instruction is also trying to use the same inputs. The NOP doesn't use memory, doesn't use register file. The add instruction doesn't use memory, but uses the register file. Both of them uses our updates and uses the PC. And I guess they also use the instruction memory. So who can tell me definitely which one doesn't need a marks here from A, B, C, D, E? Yes?
I say A definitely doesn't, because it's okay to accidentally read something from the registers if you aren't using it.
Yes, yes, that's right. So when we are, NOP doesn't use the register, but we can still read them, but it's okay as long as we don't use them to do something else. Yes?
This would only be because regardless, I guess we're assuming that each instruction and no op are equal length. So this is just a add one.
So this is a tricky case. So you would have been correct if they have the same instruction length. And the example that we have shown, NOP was taking only one byte, and the add was taking only one byte, but that byte contained two register numbers. But if we try to design something for both of them, like now actually we need some opcode, right? So now the add has to have something before these two register numbers to differentiate between NOP and add. So based on the length, we have to change the PC differently. Or another option is we make them the same length, but that's not we have that that's not how Y86 is designed here. But if we could have fit them in the same instruction length, then we would not need any mask. But here the instruction length is actually different. Yes. Here? D. Before one of the register file to write inputs. We need a mask or we don't need a mask? Yes, that's correct. So we want to make sure that we don't write some incorrect value to our register. So we will actually need a mask to make sure that no op doesn't change the state of the processor. And I guess what's remained here, the only thing remained is before one of the register file register number to write inputs. Yes. So we don't want to update the register in the NOP instruction. So we want a mask here. But remember what I said for the register file, that we have this special thing FF. So we will actually use that to make sure that don't write something while we are executing the NOP instruction.
So
we still have to provide FF or some register number, right?
Yeah.
So that's why we will need a mask.
For C.
Oh,
for C and not for D.
Register number to write. Okay, yes, that's correct. So once we say that we have used FF here, that means that whatever value we put here, it won't write. The register would not write. So in that case, we don't need a mask. Any more questions? So if we try to summarize what we have learned so far, is we are trying to design a processor which executes instruction within one cycle. And we will learn later how to optimize it. But this, the sequential processor, at each cycle, we execute one instruction. But within that one cycle, for each instruction, we divide them into conceptual stages. So we will see that what are those stages. But at the high level, what happens is within that one cycle, during the clock duration, we read values from the previous cycle. We do some calculation, and then we send the new values to the state components. We use muxes to decide which values go to the states. And once the cycle ends, the values get updated to our states. So given that, now let's try to design. Oh, OK, yes.
On the multiple choice that we had before,
mm-hmm.
did we need to put a mux before the instruction memory?
No, because let's take a look at here. So usually the PC says what value we want to read from the instruction memory, and we already controlled what value would be updated in the PC using a mask here. So here, before the instruction memory, we don't need a mask. Do you want to ask? Okay, so now let's assume our ISA has these three instructions, and all of them are move instructions. So our processor can move things from instruction to register. It can move some immediate value to some register. So this is the IR move queue instruction. Then it could move register to register. So any value in the register RXX would get transferred to RYY if we use the RR move queue instruction. And also we have this memory to register move, which takes the value of RXX, adds this displacement, and use it as the memory location to read the value of that memory location and then transfers that value to RYY, register RYY. So these are the three instructions that we will now try to implement. And here we have the exact same encoding we have used at Y86. So for RR move queue, it starts with R20, and then it takes input as it has space for two register number, RA and RB. So RA is the source, RB is the destination. Then we have IR move queue, where the opcode is 30. And this value in B is actually transferred to the register RB. And you can see that there is this if, which says that don't reach it register RA, which will make our design a bit easier because FF says don't do anything. Then we have MR move queue, where the opcode is 50, and it takes the value of RB, adds that value to D. The result is the location of memory, reads the value from the memory location, and assigns it to RA. So here RA is destination, but I guess for RR move queue, RA is still the source. So the first step is we will assume that PC is set up correctly in the previous cycle, right? So we just take the PC, feed it to the instruction memory. The memory will read the instruction and output it. But now, we could have any of these three instructions. So what we actually have to do is we have to look at the opcode and decide what instruction it is. And let's try to design the RR move queue first. So for RR move queue, we have here the split logic, which will take the value from register RA and send it to the source of the input of the register file. But we also have the next register number, which is RB, and this is our destination. So here we send it to destination, and you can see that it's also short, also wired to source B, but this is just for convenience, like we will use it later. But for this one, we don't use both the values. So for register to register move, once we have provided some values to source A input, the register file would read the value of that register and output it. And our instruction says that write back that value to RB. And remember that if we want to write something to the register file, we actually need two inputs. We get the value from this R source A, but we also need the register number for the destination. So that's why now we have two inputs. And what will happen is once we hit the leading clock edge, the value in the register, destination register, will get updated. Any question?
Why do we need to read register B?
We don't need, but we will use it in later instructions. So we could have just avoided that. Okay. So now, this is not the only instruction that we are trying to design, right? So here for our register to register move queue, our destination is RB. But we could have also other instructions where exactly here, where we have something else as the destination. So that's why we actually have to have a logic which says that what should be the value to which we want to write to the register. So that's why we have this mask. We will select the correct value to input. And we also need this logic which looks at the opcode and decides what kind of operation it is. So if it's RR move queue, it looks at the first byte, which is 20, and says that for this instruction, we actually will use this value from the register, the source register, as the value that we want to update in our register file. Any question here? Okay. So now we are moving to the next instruction, which is immediate to register. So immediate says that take the value from the instruction, this green part, and write it back to RB. So what is different from the prior instruction? The prior instruction was taking the output of the register, the source register, R source A. But here, what we want to write back is the immediate. So this is where the mask is helping us. what we are doing for IR move Q is the immediate is coming from the instruction. So we are taking it from this split logic, which will get rid of this part and give us only the V. We will take that value and input it to the mux. So here, the opcode, if we see that the opcode is 3-0, the mask will select the second line, and the input to our register number, the register is the value that we want to update, will become this immediate. Any question here? Okay, so now we are getting to the next instruction, which is more complicated than the prior 2-1. So the first 2-1, they didn't use memory at all, but the memory to register move Q actually have to access memory and then write back the data which it has read from the memory to the register file. So first thing we have to do is, so look at here. So it the source is value of register B. So definitely we have to take the register number and send it to here, source B. And we also have to get this D from our instruction. So once we provide source B here, we get the value of that register. We take it and send it to this ALU. The ALU now takes the value of the register, source register RB, and takes the immediate from here, which is this D, and adds them. And that's the address of the memory location. So that gets to our data memory. Any question? So see that we need two things to get the memory location. We need the value of RB and we need this displacement which comes from the instruction. So that's why the ALU needs two inputs. One is coming from this register, and one is coming from the immediate. So after we provide the address to the data memory, now the data memory reads the value in that location and outputs it. And that value needs to be written back to this register RA. So we have to provide two things. First, we have to provide the value which is coming from the memory. So now see that there are the mask has three inputs. Also, we actually have to say that what is the register number. And we are actually adding one more mask here. Before that, we didn't have this RA as destination. The RA was always going to the source A, but now we actually have to have a different destination, which could be either RA or RB. So that's why we have a mux here. To recap, there are three things we could write back to our register file after any of these operations. For RR move Q, we are writing back the value of the register RA. So that's why there is one input, input number one. For IR move Q, the value we are writing back to the register is the constant coming from the instruction. That is the second input. And the third one is coming from memory. Yes.
Shouldn't the ALU take source B as input the ALU? Yeah.
Okay, I guess, where is it? This is the one input, which is...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you're right, yes, good catch. Yes, we will correct it when we close the slide, yes. It's good to have students who can catch mistakes. So to recap, for the mask, which will decide what value we write back to register, we have three choices. So that's why we need a mask, and we have three types of input coming from the value we want to update. Either it's the value of register A, or it's the value of the immediate, or it's the value of a memory location. And another mask we need is to decide what is the destination register number. And we have actually two options here. For register to register move and immediate to register move, the destination is RB. But for memory to register move, the destination is RA. So we need another mask here. Are we done? What do you think? Or we need to do something more? Yes.
We need to increment the program counter?
Yes. So to increment the program counter, we have to know the length of the instruction. And here we actually have two options. Like for register to register move, the length is 2 bytes. And for rest, the other two instructions, the length is 10 bytes. So that's why now we have another mask, which could select either +2 or +10. So we take the current PC, and we could have input as PC +2 or PC +10. But we will select one of those based on the opcode. So that's why we have this logic which looks at the opcode, if it's 20, 30, 50, and decide which one we want to pass. Yes? Should we have three inputs? Do we need a logic which can differentiate between 2, 3, 5?
Yeah, like,
or we actually need to look at the zeros? Is that the question?
That's when, like, can it automatically check that 3 and 5 are both plus 10 and 2 is +2?
Yes, so we need to design a logic which can do that.
I guess, as we'll see next time, we will not deal with the details mm-hmm. of how you would design that logic. If you want to learn about that, take 20 through 30. They will tell you how to make that. We will just assume that you can ask for logic which, given 2, selects 0, given 3 or 5, gives you 1, and make that. And have someone make that for you.
So when you're doing your assignments, yeah, I guess you don't have to deal with those. Any more questions? If there is no more question, I guess we will just end the class here. But this is an opportunity to ask more questions and maybe embarrass me. No? Okay, then see you in the next class. Thank you.